The Blast from Our Past Network.
Hey everybody, Corey here.
And it's me, Zach.
We wanted to tell you about our new show called The Coscarelli Factor.
You can find it on our Patreon at patreon.com/podcastingafterdark. The Coscarelli Factor covers every single film that Don Coscarelli has directed. And some other little bonus features in there too, like maybe the music videos he directed as well.
That's right. You can find all the episodes under the Auteur de Force tier on our Patreon page. Like Zach said, that's patreon.com/podcastingafterdark. And if you sign up today, you will get access to the complete Carpenter Factor series, where Zach and I went through every single movie that John Carpenter directed, from Dark Star all the way to, well, all the way till the end. So sign up today to our Patreon page and you can unlock all kinds of other things as well, like ad-free episodes and our monthly wrap-up After Dark show.
Patreon helps keep the lights on in the podcasting After Dark world. It gets pretty dark out there at night and all your support keeps us from getting too scared.
And thank you to everyone who's signed up to our Patreon page. We really appreciate it. And as always,
we'll catch you on the dark side.
Supernatural, Halloween, exploitation, slashers, and everything in between. Welcome to the Podcasting After Dark Watch List, the show where a guest chooses a topic and the hosts, along with the guest, discuss their top favorites. Light a candle, hide your Ouija board, and enjoy the Podcasting After Dark Watch List.
What's up, everybody? Welcome to the Podcasting After Dark Watch List. I am one half of the PAD team, Corey, a.k.a. Sleazy C. Joined with me, as always, is my brother from another mother, Zach, the Total Snackage Schaefer. And for this exciting episode of The Watch List, we have our pals Steve and Jared from the Puppet Masters Castle Freaks podcast. We were on their show last year talking about Zone Troopers, and we had a blast with that. And we were like, hey, man, we got to get you guys on our show and return the love. And here we are. And I'm excited. Your all's show is a show that I've been listening to since last year. And it's one of, honestly, it's the best show about everything Full Moon and Empire Records, you know, Charles Band.
Well, that's Empire good because it might be the only one. So yeah, I'm glad it's the best one.
The best one we have about Rex Manning Day. Yes.
Exactly. And I apologize for calling them Empire Records. I don't know why that movie just okay.
I do it at least once a week. Yeah.
I accidentally called Gem and the Holograms Gem and the Alcoholics today. So
there you go.
That's the VH1 True Hollywood Story or whatever. I mean, like, what happened?
Let's be honest.
those ones are truly, 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 truly outrageous.
Yeah, the truly in there.
So before we jump into the movies that you guys are saying are your favorites from Empire mm-hmm. Pictures and Full Moon, give us a little background on your show and maybe just elevator pitch and sort of how it was incepted and everything like that.
Well, first of all, thank you so much for having us, because I feel like we never get an opportunity to talk about Full Moon movies. So it's really nice to kind of get back into, no, I'm kidding. But thank you very much for having us. We are excited to be here.
We are. And I'm glad that, you called it out, Corey, before. It's about time you guys had an exciting episode.
Yeah.
So here we are.
I love it.
Yeah, it's been very snoring.
So we've been doing the show close to 2 years now, a little over. We're about to hit our 100th episode this week, actually, as people are listening to this. And I think we originally met doing a podcast called Talking Terrific Television, which is a Sopranos podcast, like an episode by episode breakdown of the entire Sopranos with our friends J.R. Rawls and Vanessa Murray. We got to talking about horror movies like off camera and like realized that we were both like hyper fanatics about this stuff. And it also that we were the only two people that we knew of that read the book. It Came from the Video Aisle. By Dave J, which is a really, really comprehensive oral history of Full Moon Productions, all the way up from the end of Empire until, yeah, till the mid-Evil Bongs, I guess we'll call it. yeah, we both read it. We both love the book. And, like, we get, the more we kept digging into the book, I think the more we were just like, I think we have to do this podcast. Like, I don't know if anybody else is doing this podcast right now.
Yeah, it was kind of half a joke. And I'm going to say, Steve, you said mid-Evil Bongs, but honestly, there's going to be so many Evil Bongs in the future that we'll have refer to it as only covering the early Evil Bongs.
Oh, damn it. Yeah, we're in the
more of them by the time, you know, the final book on all this is written. But we talked about it and we were like, oh man, Full Moon's so crazy. You know, it's, and really what it was, there was another catalyst sort of at the same time, which was that we had read, It Came from the Video Aisle. But then I remember talking to Steve off mic and being like, dude, Confessions of a Puppet Master is coming out.
Mm-hmm.
And it was like that Charles Band's autobiography.
Yeah.
So I was kind of like, I can't wait to read that because I bet you there's going to be a lot of conflicting stories about like the production of certain things compared to how it's written about and it came from the Video Aisle. And then I started thinking about it and we had another idea sort of with one of the other people we were podcasting with, and he wanted to take a thing where you would find like whatever's considered to be like the 500 objectively worst pieces of media,
mm-hmm.
and then sit down and watch them and try to decide if there's redeeming qualities to it. And we were like, that's kind of a fun idea. And then that sort of morphed into, it was like, man, like we were just talking about Full Moon. There's so many Full Moon movies. And then I was like, that has to have been done. Like somebody has to have done that.
Right.
So I looked into it just to make sure the market wasn't flooded with comprehensive Full Moon podcasts.
Right.
And sure enough, there was like one show with the same mission statement, like we're watching all Full Moon features, and they got like five episodes in and gave up.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
It's not for the faint of heart.
It's not. And I looked at it and at that point, that show was even a few years old since they mm-hmm. had done the last episode. And they only did, like I said, like maybe five episodes. And I was like, all right, cool. Like this is not, you know, an untapped, this is not a oversaturated market, I should say. It's kind of untapped. And so we were like, well, if we're going to do it, like, let's do it right. And then we were like, we'll do all of them. But, and then we started talking about it. It's like, but, you know, I want to be able to talk about some Empire Pictures movies. Okay, well, we'll do Empire too. It'll be Full Moon Features podcast, but we'll allow for Empire movies. And then we got to talking. It's like, ah, yeah, but you know what, man? I really want to talk about Tourist Trap.
Mm-hmm.
So it's like, you know what? Fuck it. It's Charles Band. It's whatever Charles Band produced. And now we're even getting into, we found this like whole subset of like executive producer non-credits that he has on movies too. And we're like, shit, I think we have to throw these in the spreadsheet too. And there's so many of them. So, I mean, we're looking ahead, you know, we've got our 100th episode coming up. And as of now, we've still got well over 300 more to cover.
Okay.
Yeah.
Wow. Wow. So there is an end game in sight, or you just keep going? And
Let's be real. Charles Band is going to outlive all of us,
yeah,
and continue making movies until he croaks. So
he just okayed four more movies as we were talking right now. So
he may not outlive his current wife because she's pretty young, but he will definitely outlive. Yes.
Yes. Yeah.
Well, that's awesome. Cause yeah, Zach and I had to sort of evolve our mission statement early on. Like I think our first season, we're like, it's all the movies that like our parents didn't want us watching. And then like halfway through the season, we're like, we got to open this up. And it just became, you know, cult movies and stuff like that. But we had a blast, you know, on your show talking about Zone Troopers and everyone should go check out that episode. It was a lot of fun, but you guys bring a lot of knowledge to the table. You guys bring great conversations to the table everything. So I think people will enjoy all the knowledge that you're going to bring to this watch list as well. So Zach, are you ready, buddy? Should we start this off?
I guess I am. I got your
Full Moon shirt on.
I got my Full Moon. I got all my Full Moon swag. You know, when we were on.
To be clear, Zach, you're the most prepared out of all of us.
You are. Yeah, far and away.
I may be the most prepared when it comes to actual memorabilia because I
props,
you know,
yeah,
I said it on your show and I'll say it again. I have been a fan of Full Moon since I was allowed to rent videos on my own as a kid. So, mm-hmm. you know, I when the catalogs came out, I jumped on board. When the Full Moon Fanatic Membership Club came out, I jumped on board with that. Found out from the man himself that you don't get anything with the membership card, because I showed up at a Fangoria convention and he's like, yeah, I don't think. I said, can I get a discount? And he's like, no, but you got the card. I'm like, oh, well, thank you. He goes, I'll autograph a photo for $25. I'm like, sure, I'll do
that.
There
you go.
But yeah, and like being on your show, being able to talk about Full Moon movies, Empire films, you know, we've covered quite a few on Podcasting After Dark, Broken Down Trancers and Prison and
Dr. Mordred.
Yeah. And TerrorVision. Did we do TerrorVision?
Yeah. TerrorVision is like our third episode, or like it's in the first five. It's one of these days when we have to just revisit the first season and stuff. But
way back when. It feels good to always go down the road with Full Moon, because it's that comfort blanket for me, you know. Full Moon Pictures, Empire Pictures, those are like the comfort films that, you know, I had as a kid, and I'll watch them now and I still get the same joy I did back then. So your guys' show is fantastic. Everybody needs to check it out. All of our listeners, just go ahead and check that out. You can't have you can have like five podcasts that you listen to. You don't have to have one or two. You can have five. I'll say five to get maybe seven, you know, flex day. You'll have a flex day. Anyways, you guys do a really great job, and I really appreciate that you go so extensively into your lore of Full Moon Entertainment.
Well, if you don't mind indulging me for a second, like where I was saying how we were like, all right, well, let's do the show. And we, you know, we realized kind of early on, you know, these are B movies, and these are movies like Full Moon has its fan base, but it also has its detractors, and it can also be sort of a punchline.
Yeah.
And I think it would have been sort of the easy route to be like, well, most of these are considered disposable and not particularly good movies by the sort of the mainstream consumers. So it would be very easy to approach the show watching them and making fun of them. And the kind of that's how they exist in a lot of podcasts out there now. Is like a lot of podcasts is like comedy movie podcasts, and they really just kind of drag the movies through the mud. And, you know, not that they can't do a good job at what they do, but Steve and I kind of decided from the beginning that wasn't really what we wanted to do. Yeah. Like we'll make jokes about stuff here and there. I mean, if there's something that looks like absolute shit or a terrible line reading, like we're not going to gloss it over per se. But we're not here to, like, we've really developed a reverence towards the company and towards a lot of the movies, and even kind of the bottom of the barrel stuff. We really approach the show now where we try to find positive things to talk about. And we also decided early on that, like, we wanted to separate ourselves from any other potential. I mean, not like I said, there's not a ton of Full Moon podcasts, but our friend of the show, Ted Gagan, who was on, you know, a New York filmmaker who was on our Slave Girls from Beyond Infinity episode. I was talking to him right when Steve and I started the show, and he was like, he was having a really kind of frank conversation. And he was like, what you really need to do, if you really want to take this seriously, is like, don't just spend a lot of time letting the show grow, being like you and your host, maybe having friends on. He's like, if you want to get guests, like go after those people, because you can get those Full Moon people.
Yeah.
So he was like, get experts, get names within the B movie community. Just don't be afraid to ask people to come on the show and cast a big net for people.
Right.
And it was like, I think we both thought we would start the show, and for the first while it would be a really tiny, minuscule audience, and us like telling our friends like, hey, give this a listen if you don't mind. But it was like within a couple of months, we were doing interviews with Ted Nicolau. We were doing interviews with Denise Duff and Kevin Spiritus and those people, and Jeffrey Byron doing a whole like 90-minute episode with us about the Dungeon Master. Like, and yeah, that was cool. I'm so thankful that we sort of took it. We didn't start it out and then eventually go, oh, like, let's get serious. We kind of started serious, and I think that was for the best, because it enabled us to get going really fast, to where we did like maybe six or seven episodes early on that were mostly just me and Steve. And then there's a stretch of like 90 plus episodes that are guests every week.
Yeah.
Because everyone was saying yes, and I was shocked.
It was great.
And I think that's what I really gravitated to your all show to begin with, because that's sort of Zach and I's mentality, too, is we don't try to do the Mystery Science Theater 3000 thing.
Yeah.
I think snark and, sniping some of these movies, that's easy, Finding the love, finding the good stuff to, really elevate these movies and really tell people, these movies are, there's some good stuff in them. I think that's the hard thing to do. Mm. And still, we try to be funny when we do it, and if something's funny in the movie, we can call it out, but mm-hmm. we're not shitting on these movies for 2 hours long and everything like that. And yeah, and Zach right away, pretty much reached out to people. We actually got Richard Band on,
awesome.
To do an interview, and he actually schooled us on the penitentiary, because I mentioned
prison.
I mentioned in prison that because the Shout Factory documentary says that they used the aliens Horner, temp track, and that's why the music sort of sounds like it. And I mentioned it on the air, and then he listened to the episode, and he's like, "Nope, that wasn't the case." And I was like, "Well, that wasn't my idea. Shout Factory said that, but I was the one that got caught, saying it." So, but it's nice. It's nice to actually listen to it,
No, Richard is great, and he also, I think you hit the nail on the head, Jared. If you come into this with a sincerity and positivity, and you want to have guests on your show, you're going to get them. If you go in with snark and comedy, you're going to fill the shows with your friends, and that's all good. If that's what you want to do, it's what you want to do. But if you really want to go into this and talk to the people who make these things, and they are all artists, to a lesser degree, depending on who you talk to, but they all have a hand in creating something, either whether it's magical to some and it's not to others. So I love that it's magical to you guys overall. And I'm down to discuss your watch list topic movies for tonight. I may be sprinkling in some memorabilia for some of the movies, because I think I have something for almost every pick, or most of your picks.
Well, okay. We have 12 movies to go through. Now, normally we would do them one at a time, just go around and talk about them. But since I want to be aware of Jared's, he's on the East Coast, and we don't want to keep him up till 1 in the morning. So what we're going to do is we're going to go first by era. So Steve's going to do Empire Pictures, and he's going to do his three. He's just going to announce all three of them at once, talk about whatever he wants to talk about, and Jared can throw in on it. And then Zach and I will talk about them, and then we'll move on to Jared's Empire Pictures, and then back to Steve, Full Moon, and then end with Jared's three Full Moon picks. But go check out the podcast, go check out the Puppet Masters Castle Freaks podcast. These guys love Full Moon and Empire Pictures and just this, all the stuff that we love. Again, we love them too, so it's great to see other people actually give these movies love.
Totally.
But Steve, you're up first, buddy, with Empire Pictures. What are your three favorites?
All right, well, I'm not going to revolutionize this list at this time, because there are a couple of clear front runners in the Empire catalog. So I have to say my number one and my number two, not necessarily in that order, sometimes they flip around, are both Stuart Gordon films, Reanimator and From Beyond, two absolutely undeniable, incredible cosmic horror films. Definitely check it out. And then my third is a movie that we've been talking about a lot already this episode, the movie Prison, which is maybe my favorite discovery that we've had on the show before. Mm-hmm. I've seen Reanimator and From Beyond before we did this show. I'd never seen Prison. It's very hard to find these days. And I sought it out, and I absolutely loved it. I loved its weird practical gore. I think it's really propulsive and funny and cool, and definitely check that one out.
Is that Blu-ray out of print now?
Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, I think it is. Yeah.
I wonder if Shout's going to put out a 4K then, maybe.
Probably.
You can watch it on YouTube for right now in pretty good quality. I don't think it's the full Blu-ray quality, but it is. It looks pretty good on YouTube.
I'll take this opportunity to plug our episode on Prison, which came out, I think, in May of 2024. And we had the amazing critic Scott Weinberg on with us for that episode. And the cool thing, it's a really fun one. We had a blast recording that episode, and we got a lot of really good feedback on it. And one of my favorite show moments happened here, which was that, we plan our episodes in the spreadsheet, and we tend to record our show pretty far in advance. At least usually we're 8 weeks ahead
This is a week in advance.
We
started, we had recorded like 5 or 6 episodes before the first one even dropped when we started the show, and then we like were booking people so quickly we just got to like a solid 2 months and then never slowed down, so we just stayed with that pace, which has been great. But we set it up and we were like, all right, Scott, this is when we're going to do it. And then the Nighthawk Cinema, which is like an Alamo Drafthouse style movie theater near me, they curate a program on like one of the weeknights, I forget which one, called Ridiculous Sublime. And the person who curates that picks 35 millimeter prints of movies that they like and then does an introduction for them. And 2 days before our scheduled recording of Prison, they showed a 35 millimeter print of Prison.
Wow.
And I went and I got to watch it on the big screen before our recording, and it fucking ruled.
Still so jealous of that. Yeah.
Oh, that's awesome.
I got to say, that is probably one of the coolest movies to see in a theater that very few have seen in a theater. We have, you know, the Arrow here does a 12-hour horror-thon every Halloween, and they show mainstream and very obscure horror films throughout the night, and I don't think they've shown Prison yet.
Okay.
That would be definitely, that's a bucket list movie to see it on the big screen.
And because, you could tell a lot of the people went because it's just a lot of people support these curated programs. So sometimes a big portion of the people who go aren't familiar with the movie. They just go week to week. And you could tell it was a good crowd. It wasn't sold out, but maybe like 65-70% capacity. And, it played really well.
Wow, oh, yeah?
That's cool.
Oh, that's good. That's always good to hear. Sometimes the, you know, older movies like that, you're never quite sure how it's going to hit, you know,
great
what the
reaction
is.
I'll share a quick story that Corey and I interviewed Chelsea Fields for. We do a crossover with $2 Late Fee and Podcasting After Dark.
Mm-hmm.
And we did a crossover for Harley Davidson and the Marlboro Man. And Chelsea Field was in that, married to Scott Bakula. She played Tila in the Masters of the Universe movie, but she's also one of the lead actors in Prison. And we talked about Prison with her. She told a funny Viggo Mortensen story about how Viggo, when he first came to Hollywood, he and Rennie Harlan and Chelsea went out to dinner, and he shows up to dinner barefoot, wearing what looked like pajamas or would maybe be considered hobo chic, I think, at this point. But this is like we're talking 1988, I think, maybe. Or
yeah, around there.
And Rennie was a little disappointed, I think, by the way he was dressed. And Viggo was like, what's the big deal? You know, it's L.A. Everyone can do this here. But it was very funny. But she was very fond of that film and had a really good time making it.
Yeah.
Oh, that's
cool
amazing
movie
to hear. No,
it's
such really
a great
cool
film.
Yeah, it's just got some great gore and it's got some great, just a great cast. You know, yeah, if you want to see maybe the youngest Viggo Mortensen you're going to see in America, this is him. And he's already kind of got that star quality. He's already like a really compelling actor, even at a very young age. So that was kind of my favorite discovery. Like I said, From Beyond and Reanimator, you can kind of, I almost at this point kind of think of them in the same breath, the same way you think of like Lord of the Rings. It's like Lord of the Rings is not just like the first movie, it's the whole trilogy, you know. You got to do it every time. And I feel like From Beyond and Reanimator complement each other so well. They've got this kind of the same cast kind of going through, so it kind of feels like a repertory thing, you know, where they're just like mixing up the shows every night and like bringing in the same cast. But they're exploring such dark and weird stuff. Stuart Gordon was just this avant-garde theater director who brought some real interesting ideas to horror cinema. And like, even when he was working towards the end of his career on like a micro budget, he was always finding interesting things to do.
Yeah.
And I think Reanimator is kind of the most perfect synthesis of anything that he's ever done.
Yeah, we on our Patreon, we have a tier called the Auteur de Force tier. And
oh,
we covered all of John Carpenter's films for like, it took us like two years and like a couple months.
Okay.
And we're wrapping up Don Coscarelli right now. We just recorded his two music videos. We did an episode on the two music videos that he did, one for Dio and then one for Bill Thornberry's band. And we let our patrons vote on the next auteur that we're going to do. And we have three for the next go. And Stuart Gordon is one of those three. Now, just now, if he doesn't win the vote, we'll still probably get to him one of these days. Because Zach and I both love, you know, pretty much everything, you know, he puts out. And as far as these three movies go, you know, we covered From Beyond. We, you know, everyone knows our thoughts on that one. We love that one. We cover Prison. And then why we haven't covered Reanimator is because Zach and I both own it, and it's always been our number one backup movie. If something goes wrong, if we can't get a hold of a movie for somebody, whatever, because a lot of our movies that we cover now are Patreon picks. We always have Reanimator's always our backup, and for 6 years it's just been our backup. You know?
I mean, it's old reliable. I mean, it's great, but I mean, you can absolutely just like break this out and watch it at any time. Like it is so effortlessly fun. And I mean, I've been kind of like soft pitching that on our show, we've actually covered every Stuart Gordon movie that kind of falls within our purview. Mm-hmm. So everything he did for Empire and Full Moon all the way up to Castle Freak, you know, so we're done technically with Stuart Gordon, but I keep kind of soft pitching that we should just do the rest of them, like even though they have nothing to do with our show, just because it would be fun to do episodes about Fortress and King of the Ants and the even the Wonderful Ice Cream Suit, you know, and these weird obscure family movies that he made, you know, Honey, I Shrunk the Kids. Like I'd love to throw some of that in there.
Yeah, do it. I mean, we're throwing we're going to cover Ravager, even though Don Coscarelli didn't direct it, but we're going to throw it into it just because it's like, let's button up the conversation. On Phantasm and everything. Zach, I cut you off. Sorry.
No, I was going to say, if we have a friend, David Irons, he's a horror writer, and he wants us to cover Wes Craven on our show for Auteur de Force. And I said, I don't want to do Music from the Heart, though. I just don't want to have to discuss that movie. However, that being said, it's not that bad. Jared, you mentioned Nighthawk here where you live, and we have one, a curated like horror film series here in LA, Culver City, called Hellraiser's Film Club. And they show a lot of great horror films. And they just showed 35mm print of Reanimator about a week or so ago. And Barbara Crampton came to that screening and did a Q&A with the audience. And you don't want to plug or tease or whatever. You guys might have something to share in a minute. But Barbara Crampton is... I will share one funny story.
Never heard of her.
Yeah. So she, so there's a guy here in LA, he's since passed, but his name's Eric Caden, and he owned a bookstore, a poster place called Hollywood Book and Poster Company. I believe it's, And they would do grindhouse nights at the New Beverly Cinema, and he would do these giveaways and all sorts of fun contests when he was there. The actual Dolomite Rudy Ray Moore came there and did in a wheelchair and did a whole comedy bit. It was amazing. And anyways, he told this funny story about Barbara Crampton showing, they were screening Reanimator at the Egyptian, and he came up to her at the end with autographed photos. I believe it was the Egyptian. It might've been at a Fangoria convention. Anyways, came up to her with autographed photos. And one of them was the infamous scene where she's, you know, in all her glory. And she's like, oh, I'm not signing that. And he's like, oh, okay. Well, how about these? And he's giving her other ones to sign. And she's signing them gracefully. This is way before we were charging for autographs. And he slowly slips the other one kind of underneath a photo. So she doesn't know it, but she actually signs the photo without becoming aware. And then she goes, wait a minute, let me see that one. And he just hightails it out of there. And this is a guy that weighs like 300 pounds. And he's booking out of this theater. And she's screaming at him, get that guy! Get that guy! And he made it out. Man. And he still had the photo. I'm not saying you should ever bring that up to her if you happen to interview her, but I'm sure it's not the first time that's happened to her.
No. Certainly not. I can only imagine. But yeah, if you know, if you love Reanimator as much as we all do, and you're like, okay, it's interesting hearing these people who've watched the movie give some like second or third hand accounts of stuff that happened. But you want, you know, something from a person who lived it, you can on March 14th download our 100th episode, which is on Reanimator. We saved it specifically for that to have it also time with the 40th anniversary release. And We are joined by Barbara Crampton and Amazing. Michael Gingold.
Wow.
To do that one. And it was so funny how that came about too, because like Barbara, I don't know her well, but I've gotten to know her a bit over the last year or two through mutual friends. And like, I was talking to her and kind of pitching her on the show, but she's busy. And with the Reanimator anniversary stuff coming up, it's like, you know, there's so many convention phone calls and emails and stuff she's dealing with. So I didn't want to like push her too much. And Gingold was like the ultimate gateway, because he was like, oh, well, I have a lot of stuff to say about Reanimator too. And I was like, okay, cool. You want to like get Barbara on board?
Right. Yeah, sure.
And because he's a friend. And so that was really nice, like getting it to work. But once she agreed to it, I mean, we were talking back and forth about different things, and she's just the best.
She's the coolest. Yeah. I'm excited for people to hear that. That was really fun getting her perspective on it. It sounds like such a fun environment too, to be making that movie. So,
Yeah.
Still very tight with all of her co-stars, which is awesome. So,
great choices, really cool. Steve. I mean, they obviously are a little bit more, I guess, kind of on the mainstream when it comes to
a little meat and potatoes.
But for
my full moon choices, I mixed it up. But yeah, we'll get to those.
Well, I will say though, but if you didn't mention those, people would be like, "Well, wait a minute, what about Reanimator?"
Yeah,
that's because there's always
the thing is like, do you want to go deep cut or do you want to like, are you a people pleaser? Yeah, and our podcast, I got Zach's more of the deep cut. I'm more of the people pleaser.
Hey, but you gotta have that yin to the yang. You know what I'm saying?
You do. I'm the Steve of the group.
There we go.
Jared, what are your three Empire Picture picks?
Okay, so I am going to go off script here.
Oh.
I'm going to keep my number one the same, but I'm going to drop one of my three because it coincides with Steve's. And then I'm going to pull another one out that is not actually my favorite, but one that I would say was sort of a discovery and one that has really stayed with me since we did it. So my number one is Reanimator. So I have to keep it that way because I would just be lying to myself and lying to the public if that wasn't the clear cut number one in my list. It's a movie that, you know, outside of the parameters of this show has been a staple in my horror viewing for the last probably 30 years. I've watched it countless times, even before this show was even a seed of an idea. It was always one of my favorite movies. And so I was delighted that we got to cover it on the show because it fell within the parameters. But Reanimator is my number one. My number two, I am sticking to the list for this one. And it's a movie that I fucking love, and it is Trancers.
Zach, you love that movie, buddy. So do I.
You're not going to get any. I'm going to let you keep going, Jared. But yeah, you're not going to get.
Jack Death.
Yeah, those two. I love that. Yeah, and so Trancers, I love that. Had to be my number two, and my number three was From Beyond, but I'm going to change it because so we don't spend too much time talking about the same ones. And I'm going to change it to one that is ridiculously hard to find, which is really unfortunate because it's a movie that I think people need to see and it needs to be remastered and it needs to be in a new Empire of Screams box set. And that is the 1987 Peter Manoogian movie, Enemy Territory. Enemy Territory is so much fun. And it is one that, like, I knew the premise of the movie. I somehow, despite all of these similar kind of, like, dystopian, like, cat and mouse movies where somebody's got to get out of a location and they're kind of boxed in by people. And like, a gang member type movie. Like, this is prime fodder for, like, in New York, we had a WPIX Pix 11 would show these movies on, like, Saturday afternoon or something like that. But I never saw this one, but I knew that it had Ray Parker Jr. in it, and I knew the premise of what it was about. And people, one of our early guests wanted to watch it originally and then ended up choosing a different movie. So we put it on the back burner for a little while. And I watched it and I was so upset that we weren't going to talk about it. And I had to keep it to myself until months later we did the episode on it. And I watched it the second time for the recording. That movie is just a blast. You know, Tony Todd, R.I.P. Tony Todd, mm-hmm. yep. you know, an early performance by him.
Head of the Vampires.
Yeah. yeah.
Head of the Vampires. It's
They do that in the movie many times. Yes.
Yep.
It's so fun. And it's like you tell people who's in it. I mean, you got Jan Michael Vincent as this like grizzled, disabled army vet
yeah.
who's like holed up in his apartment, you know, with like tons of like weapons of mass destruction and mm-hmm. ammunition in, and it's got, you know, young Stacey Dash and you know, Ray Parker Jr. In an attempt to get his acting career going. It's just such a
it didn't work
but it's such an interesting relic. And I think you describe the parts of this movie to people who've never seen it or never heard about it. And they go, that can't be a real movie.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
Like, well, it certainly is.
Were we talking about that with David?
Well, so yeah, we have a over on $2 Leafy, my other show, we have a sub show called Tales from the Video Store. And occasionally we will do a tribute to an actor if they've passed away. And we did one on Tony Todd, and we talk about movies from said actor's career during the 80s. And we run down their filmography and anything that jumps out to us that we've seen. And Enemy Territory, I saw, there's a store here called Be Kind Rewind, I believe. It's in Burbank. And they screened a VHS copy of it. Because you're right, Jared, there's no really good quality version of this film out there. The one on YouTube is decent at best. But it is a gem of a film, and we did talk about it, Corey.
It was the one where David got, he thought it was Ghetto Blaster, I think.
Ghetto Blaster.
Like, no, it's, yeah.
Yeah.
Enemy which Territory
is another movie worth seeking out, but it's not an Empire film. But, Enemy Territory is great. I totally agree with you as well, Jared. I mean, Trancers, we could talk all day about Trancers. Corey and I, we broke it down. I love Trancers. Trancers is one of my all time favorite movies in general.
That was your Christmas pick, I believe, 2 years ago.
Yes, because it is a Christmas movie.
Yeah, and yeah,
but if anyone, Enemy Territory, you know, you put it out into the universe and it'll come back. I guarantee you someone's going to get a hold of that, whether it be Vinegar Syndrome or Arrow or whatever. It's got to happen.
Here's hope. Well, we've been interviewing some people who have worked for those companies and just kind of like soft pitching them, like as if they have any power in that. But we're planting the seeds, you know. We're
good.
Just like, ooh, you know, if we could curate the next box set, we would probably put these movies in.
Yeah, because it often gets overlooked. Go ahead.
I was just gonna say it's funny because like I feel like I'd never heard of it, even looking at the cover of it. Like I don't even recognize the cover. And then, you know, our discussion a couple months ago, and then now this, I'm like, I'm dying to watch this movie now. Like I need to find this movie.
Yeah, so I used to do these birthday collages back in the day on Instagram for $2 late fee, and I would pull all these random titles from actors' careers, and occasionally I always tag them, and occasionally they'll chime in and go like, oh wow, you remember them. Tony Todd actually chimed in once. This is 5 years ago, Corey, I think I was doing that, right? And he it's like, I can't believe you saw this, or something like that, you know. Wild. Anyways, rest in peace to Tony Todd. And that movie is great. I highly recommend everyone seek that out. And if you don't know what Trancers is, turn this off now and go listen to Smart List, because clearly that's what you'd rather be listening to.
Exactly. Are they doing an episode on Trancers?
No, that's
what. Is Sean Hayes' take on Trancers? I'm actually curious. I'm actually genuinely curious.
I want to talk to Jason Bateman about It's Your Move, but that's a whole other story.
So. Oh, there you go. Yeah.
I'm working with Karen Kay.
Yeah, we just covered My Tutor a couple of weeks ago.
I used to do Marvel D&D with my brother and his friends. Marvel D&D was a little bit more open and a little more broader as far as D&D is concerned. And my character's name was Jack Death. and I drew him. I drew myself to look like Jack Death, and he had Phantasm balls that he would fire at people, and he had a double barrel shotgun. I'm fused him with Phantasm and Trancers. But I love that he's 5'8", 165 pounds. That's the statistics on this trading card. And I'm 5'8", and 165 pounds, so I appreciate that. And his
habits...
Yeah,
you have gray hair just like him.
Well, yeah, so his habits are keeps his hair slicked back when things get dangerous.
It's true.
And he knows how to fight
dry dirty. Hairs for squids.
That's always that's right. Yeah, my hair is right. Currently dry. Jared's is not. It's looking really good. Jared, influenced by Jack Death because of your slick back hair? I believe so.
Are you muted?
I was just going to say, you think this is slicked back? This is pushed back.
Okay. Yeah.
You can't set us up for that. You cannot set us up for that.
We are white men of a certain age. It will quickly devolve into, I think you should leave quotes.
This literally,
if you don't shut it down, this
happened to me at a friend's birthday party just 2 days ago. A random person in a bar who I'd never met, and I heard him make a "think you should leave" reference, and I responded with one, and then we just went back and forth like that for 30 seconds.
Amazing.
And then, like ships in the night, just gone. I don't know who he was,
but he was your best friend for a moment.
We connected. It was a real moment.
That's awesome.
I want to, because like we both did our three Empire, and I want to just bring a quick attention to two sort of like, I mean, we don't have to spend time on them, but kind of what I consider to be honorable mentions, because as I was thinking about my Empire list, I was like, these ones, just to highlight something for a more obscure one, if people have never seen it, a really interesting 1987 one called The Caller.
Yeah. Oh yeah. Weird one.
Yeah. With Malcolm McDowell and Madeline Smith. Yeah. It's right. Just it's just a two-hander. Really weird, twisty, turny. It doesn't make a whole lot of sense if you really scrutinize the plot, but it's very interesting. And
one of the only shows we've covered that could be done as a stage play.
Hmm. Okay,
yeah.
Cool.
Yeah. And then the other, just to kind of highlight a piece of media that Steve and I both got recently, Assault of the Killer Bimbos.
Mm. Oh, yeah.
I like Assault of the Killer Bimbos a lot. It's really silly and stupid, and it seems like it's going to be really smutty and really exploitative, and it's actually kind of tame and kind of sweet, and the precursor to Thelma and Louise, right?
Yeah, it really predates. We dug into that in our episode. Yeah. It really predates Thelma and Louise.
I found the soundtrack on vinyl, and so I bought it, and then I was like, there was another copy, and I said, I have to buy this for Steve because there's just no way he can't not get this also. So we both like recently Assault of the Killer Bimbos on vinyl.
Yeah.
And it's the only reason I think is because the Empire logo is nice and prominent on the back of the vinyl.
Awesome.
And so I was thinking about that, but those ones are fun too. But you know, those, my three, I'm sticking with Reanimator, Trancers, and Enemy Territory.
Good picks.
Okay. Yeah. Steve, do you have any deep cuts you want to throw in there for Empire before we move on, transition over to Full Moon Pictures?
I'll throw another recommend to Zone Troopers, the episode that you guys were on.
Yeah, that was a lot of fun.
It's from a lot of the same creative team as Trancers. It has a lot of like scrappy, like boys' life adventure kind of energy. It's just like four World War II commandos who meet an alien. It feels like you are a kid playing with action figures, but your action figures are just grizzled old Tim Thomerson. So that's great. It's a lot of fun. Yeah, I would say check out Zone Troopers. A lot of fun. Yeah.
And go check out the episode that we were on talking about Zone Troopers.
Absolutely.
It was a lot of fun, too. As much fun as the movie.
And just so my fiance doesn't kill me, her favorite movie of all time, and that's no joke, is Cannibal Women in the Avocado Jungle of Death.
Oh, wow. Okay.
Which is a movie I would enjoy a lot if it didn't have Bill Maher in it. And if I didn't have to look at and listen to Bill Maher for 90 minutes. It was one of those things like the casting just absolutely killed it for me. But you'd also get Shannon Tweed and you get Adrian Barbeau and a pretty witty script from the man who would go on to write Pretty Woman 2 years after that. So like... It's pretty good. Like, your mileage may vary with how much Bill Maher.
Your Maher mileage is, we don't know how much you'll get out of that, but
yeah, your mileage may vary. Yeah.
Thank you.
There you go.
I think that's a pretty fun one. And I think I wish someone else had been cast, but they aren't. I can deal with it. And if you, if you go back to our feed, also, obviously, Steve's fiance, Alish, is on that episode with us. And the episode that we did on Assault of the Killer Bimbos, we had the really fun British horror blogger, critic, writer, Becky Dark on the show with us. And she, she just, her just being turned on to me saying to her, Becky, there's a movie called Assault of the Killer Bimbos. How do you feel about that one? And she was like, I feel great about it. and she had never seen it or heard of it before. And so it's a lot of fun, her reacting to this being the movie that was chosen for her.
That's awesome. All right, Steve, let's do your three favorite full moon pictures.
All right. For full moon, I decided to go with a couple of deeper cuts. Again, most of these movies were discoveries for me because I have not seen a lot of the full moon back catalog until now. But these are the three that I had just the most fun with. First of all, I'm going to shout out Bad Channels, which is a deeply silly, very fun movie about aliens taking over a radio station, and they keep kidnapping gorgeous women from around town and putting them in very bizarre music videos. It's so much fun. It's very dumb, and I enjoy it a lot. Oh, there it is. You got the card. You got Bottle the card. Babes. Absolutely. Yep.
I'm holding up a trading card that says Bottle Babes on it. Bottle
and
Babes.
I've seen this be...
Yeah.
Am I muted?
No, we can hear
you. Oh,
no,
you're good. Yeah.
I've seen this announced on social media, so I'm not spoiling it.
Right.
And I know I can say this, especially by the time this episode drops, it'll probably have been shared a bit more. Danny Draven, friend of the show and very active Full Moon director and editor, just worked on cleaning up the 35 of Bad Channels for its Blu-ray release, which it's finally getting in June.
I swear to God, didn't Dawn of the Discs just
announced it with Crash and Burn. Those two,
Crash and Burn. Yep,
same
right.
time.
Oh yeah, Crash and Burn's the other one. Yeah, yeah.
Yep. So, okay.
So definitely check that out when it would know, because that the biggest knock I had against that movie is just that the print that existed was so ugly. It was kind of like hard to look at, and this is going to address that. So, definitely check that one out. The next one to check out is one that went completely under my radar and surprised the hell out of me, a movie called Blood Dolls. This one's from 1999. I think of it as kind of like a spiritual sequel to Head of the Family. It's got that same kind of like wacky psychosexual energy that's still somehow a very verbose like chamber piece. And it's just it's so deeply weird. And of course there's little tiny terrors crawling around killing everybody, but they're somehow like completely incidental to the plot. Same with the fact that there's a thug walking around wearing clown makeup for no reason. It's so weird. It's so fun. I just had a blast the entire time. And the soundtrack rules because they've got a girl punk band in an electrified cage that they force to rock out all the time.
Awesome.
Great soundtrack. So Blood Dolls, a lot of fun. Check that one out. And then finally, my weirdest, biggest surprise is a movie from 1994 that nearly killed Full Moon, may arguably have derailed their entire Paramount career. The movie Shrunken Heads. We talked about that on an episode, a very early episode, with author Grady Hendrix, who is the man, one of the great horror authors working today. And he was so fun, and he brought that movie to our attention. It is directed by Richard Elfman, the brother of Danny, former director of Forbidden Zone and a lot of like weird Oingo Boingo stuff. A true, insane, like mind fuck of a movie. It's imagine if it's kind of got like a Goonies energy. But like then imagine if midway through the movie, the Goonies were all brutally executed and their corpses decapitated, and the decapitated heads are brought back to life and forced to exact revenge on everybody around town. You've got it. Oh, there's all you've got the dolls.
The Full Moon catalog featured shrunken head dolls you could own for $300 or a shrunken head clock.
Oh, I would be tempted. I got to tell you, I would be tempted.
I'm sure it's available somewhere on eBay for buku bucks at this point.
Yeah, truly strange movie. And one of my favorite anecdotes in Charles Band's book was about Shrunken Heads, because he's like, this is where like everything was going great on this movie. We thought we had a real hit on our hands. We were thinking about a theatrical release.
Yeah.
And then we showed it to a test audience and we realized the problem that we made, which is that we cast 14-year-old boys to play 14-year-old boys. And they like there's a reason why most of the teenagers you see in movies are like 18, 19, 20 years old. It's because you can, you know, they don't look like little kids. 14-year-old boys look like little kids.
Yes.
And this is a movie about shooting and decapitating little kids, and it was off-putting. So I think they learned that one the hard way.
Yeah.
Well, that's one of the things we also loved about, like, Kenny and Company, you know, Don Coscarelli's earlier films, is they actually used, you know, young kids, and it actually gave that authenticity.
Yeah.
Jared, what are your thoughts on these? And I'll say real quick, I don't really have many thoughts because I never seen any of these three. I hadn't even heard of the Blood Kids with Blood Children, but I do remember
Blood Kids.
Blood dolls.
Yeah. Blood dolls. Yeah.
I do remember Shrunken Heads, the poster for that, and the Bad Channels posters burned into my brain. I remember both of those. But also looking ahead at Jared's picks. So I'm the Jared of the Full Moon, and I'm the Steve of the Empire Pictures. But Jared, what are your takes on your co-host's picks?
Yeah, we didn't even do this entirely intentionally, but that is kind of the way it worked out. Yeah.
Well, you know, I do feel like I let Steve's choices inform mine a little bit because I wasn't sure. There's been some, like Steve said, some real discoveries. Blood Dolls, Full Transparency. I went into that episode expecting it to be a slog. Mm-hmm. I expected, oh man, this is another tiny tale, like another doll movie. So much fun. Yeah. So unexpected. I think we both went into that episode with like this weird enthusiasm that neither of us thought we were going to have going in to record it.
Yeah.
The Summer from Dolls of Horror picked that one specifically. And I was like, oh, that's interesting that she chose that movie. Like, I wonder why of, you know, Blood Dolls or Doll Graveyard or Devil Dolls or why this one? And it was a good choice because we really liked it. And the same thing with Shrunken Heads. I mean, Shrunken Heads is such a batshit crazy movie.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And it's like, it makes complete sense. You watch it and it's got real Elfman energy, but also it was written by Matthew Bright, who would go on to write Freeway and Freeway 2, Confessions of a Trick Baby.
Yes.
And
which we covered.
Which we covered both of those with Nathan Rabin, really stretching the limits of what is allowed under the umbrella of the show. But we were like, you know what, if we're going to have an opportunity to talk about Freeway and Freeway 2, like, we got to take advantage of that. But I love those picks because they're not obvious, but they were, you know, if you listen to our episodes on them, they were total surprises. And so I wrestled a little bit with, like, do I pick a more obscure one that was a surprise, or do I go more with, like, which of these is the ones I'll probably revisit most?
Yeah.
Like, which are the ones that I genuinely feel like I like the most? And so when Steve picked some more obscure ones, I was like, okay, no good. I can kind of go with the more normie picks here and satisfy some, because like you said before, people would be, you know, they would have their pitchforks and torches if there are certain Full Moon movies that aren't mentioned.
Right.
And we only, I mean, we're only doing three, so we're going to upset someone.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, yeah, that always happens.
Yeah.
Zach, what are your thoughts on these three picks?
So,
I already gave mine.
A couple things. I'm covering over at $2 late fee. I'm covering the movie No Retreat, No Surrender for March Alert Madness. And we just had the stars on there, Kurt McKinney and J.W. Fales, who plays RJ in the film, and very hard to find. And I'm so glad I did. But he talked about how he was in an episode of 21 Jump Street. It's a very famous episode. It's a two-parter. It's actually the one where it's Johnny Depp's last episode on the show. Mm. It's called Loked Out. You can actually find it on YouTube. The uncut versions with the actual music in them, which is great, the original music. But he was 25 at the time, and he was cast as a 13-year-old. So I thought that was kind of funny. You know, it reminds me of the scene in Swingers when Vince Vaughn's character is talking about going up for the role, and he's like, it's like a child or whatever. Anyways, Shrunken Heads, short thing on that Danny Elfman also did the title song for that, or the theme song.
He did,
And then on the music tip for Bad Channels, Blue Oyster Cult did some of the music for Bad Channels, and the CDs, which it's so funny because I had all these CDs back in the day, and like, I don't need these anymore, and I got rid of them. They go for so much money now on eBay.
Yeah.
It's like original music that they did for the film, and then there's four other metal bands on there as well. Really fun picks. I think of all three, Bad Channels is the one I've seen the most. Shrunken Heads, I probably saw twice, and then Blood Dolls once. I mean, just being a nostalgic guy coming from like an 80s, early 90s place, I think those, the Shrunken Heads and Bad Channels, are more my vibe, but all three are very, very much Full Moon, you know, wheelhouse type movies. Like, oh, that hits all the bases. Bad Channels is way more tame than you would think it would be, you know? And I think that's one of the things I always appreciated about Full Moon. A lot of their movies, which would, could go more, you know, trashy, they don't necessarily go there always. Not all of them, but a lot of them. And I really always appreciate and respect that. I feel like the audience is more wider because of that. Yeah, great picks. Very obscure.
Thank you.
Very good, good, like good obscure ones. Because I think what I appreciate, and we got these ahead of time, Jared's picks equally are awesome too. But
yeah,
but I'm like, I like that there's diversity in there.
Yeah, for sure.
Steve, for someone like me, of those three, if I had to just watch one of them tonight, which one would you tell me to go watch?
I would probably tell you to watch Shrunken Heads, because that thing is batshit. It is a truly visionary, wonky piece of work. You know, Bad Channels and Blood Dolls are still like Full Moon movies because they've got that scrappy kind of energy. They've got their lulls, just like every Full Moon movie does. Shrunken Heads does feel like it's being made with something approximating a studio budget.
Okay.
It's being shot with like a kind of Dick Tracy kind of energy.
Oh, okay.
But what you're seeing is just weird as hell.
Okay.
So it's Dick Tracy. Yeah. It's just Dick Tracy.
That's, I mean, you're speaking my language right there.
Yeah.
I love it.
Yeah.
But yeah. Like I said, I remember both of those. I had no memory of Blood Dolls, but I do remember the Bad Channels poster because I worked at a video store and that was one of the posters that was sort of up on the wall. And then I do remember Shrunken Heads. We didn't have the poster for that, but I guess it probably popped up in Fangoria when I was reading it or just,
oh, no doubt.
You know,
yeah.
Something. But I just remember it. I'm like, oh, okay. But I wasn't watching that many Full Moon stuff in the late 90s and stuff, because I was I was too cool for that as older now. I'm like, oh, I was an asshole. That was that's what that was. I should have been watching these movies, you know, when I was. But anyways, Jared, buddy, why don't you bring us home with your three Full Moon movies?
Sure. So what I'm going to do is, as I did sort of as a cheat, I'm going to give an honorable mention for one that I feel like it has to be mentioned. It didn't make my three, but it is among my favorites and on my short list that I give to people. And that is Head of the Family.
Of course.
I mean, Head of the Family is one of my favorite Full Moon movies. It's one of the earliest like movies that I remember watching, knowing this is a Full Moon movie. Like being well aware kind of by now that time who Charles Band was and what their kind of model for making movies was. And I just remember Head of the Family, the first time I saw it, being like, this movie is insane. And I love it. I love it to this day. I think it's so funny, and it's, I can pop it on in the background and I still at certain parts, but my actual number three pick is tonally, maybe couldn't get any further from Head of the Family. And it's what I would actually go so far as to say, I think rounds out the Stuart Gordon trilogy, which is Castle Freak.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
I think Castle Freak is an amazing movie. In a conversation I had with Barbara Crampton in a bar, not on microphone, she told me that she really loves Castle Freak, but she doesn't like the title. She thinks the title is vulgar and she feels like that's why people don't like it as much as the other two movies, which is a totally fair opinion to have. I feel like it's fine. Like it describes there's a castle with a freak. It's totally, you know, it does its job, but I think it's such a good movie. And it's one that is sort of overlooked. It often doesn't get talked about in the same sentences with, you know, those other Barbara Crampton and Jeffrey Combs, Stuart Gordon movies.
No,
but I will say I went recently to this like there was like a Jeffrey Combs retrospective thing. My buddy and I drove to Pennsylvania to the Colonial Theater, and they did a big thing where it was like a Friday night and a Saturday night event. And I went to the night that showed Reanimator, then it showed Stuart Gordon's Masters of Horror with Jeffrey Combs for The Black Cat, the Edgar Allan Poe adaptation, which is quite good. And then it ended with Castle Freak, and there was a good crowd there, and they started late, and there were Q&A with Jeffrey Combs and stuff in between each movie. And so it was a late event. And I think Castle Freak didn't start till after midnight, probably. And I remember thinking, oh, man, everybody's going to leave. Like, it's going to be sad. Like, nobody's going to stay and watch Castle Freak. So many people stayed. And again, like I was saying about prison, I think a lot of people were seeing it for the first time. Like, and it played really well. And it really, like, clicked to where I was, like, watching it in the theater, which it never really had a theatrical release before, unless someone decided they were going to screen it, you know, for an event. And I was like, no, in this setting, it, with the same crowd, this movie is pretty much as good as Reanimator. It's really, really good. And I think, you know, it's got excellent performances by Jeffrey Combs and Barbara Crampton and Jonathan Fuller as Giorgio, as the Castle Freak also. Mm-hmm. Because we kind of talked about how we thought he was a bit stiff in The Pit and the Pendulum, but he's really good in this. Pit and the Pendulum also, by the way. Definitely check that one out.
Yeah, Pit and the Pendulum is from Lance Henriksen. Yeah. Yep.
But Castle Freak, I think, is so good. It's dark. It's gross. It goes places where, you know, it's shocking. And to see it in, you know, this was about 6 months ago or something. So in 2024, with a crowd who didn't know to anticipate, you know, like the scene with the prostitute and stuff, it played. I mean, people were reacting. And I think, you know, the movie's 30 years old now this year. And I think it's ripe for full reappraisal.
Like, I agree.
I think it's one we're going to start to look at, and we'll start talking when we start doing the short Stuart Gordon lists. It's going to be Reanimator, From Beyond, Castle Freak, and, you know, maybe Robot Jocks.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, love Robot Jocks.
Yeah.
But no, Castle Freak is great. And then my number two is, I don't think I sent these to you in the actual, like, order. Like, my Castle Freak was probably really my number one of these, but they're interchangeable depending on what mood I'm in.
Yeah.
So it's a three-way tie for first. A movie I watched literally 2 hours ago, just kind of in preparation, because I was like, I got a little time to kill. I'm going to throw this on. Puppet Master 3, Toulon's Revenge.
Yeah.
Yeah. The crowning achievement of the Puppet Master franchise, I think.
Totally.
And
good.
What I love about it is it's the weird choice. It's like, okay, the first one has these giallo influences. There it is. There's the trading card.
Good old six shooter.
Love it. I have a framed poster under my desk, actually, that I didn't hang up. It's just like leaning against the wall. I'm not going to like try to reach and grab it, but it's that same.
Oh, as you should. It's
poster.
So good.
But I mean, you think the first movie, and it's got kind of a mystery element to it. It's got giallo elements to it. The second movie is essentially like a Universal Monsters movie.
Yeah.
The decision to do a World War II prequel to the first movie is such a wild choice, given, you know, the fact that what the kind of time constraints and budgets they're usually working with. And the fact that it's like, I mean, I know C. Courtney Joyner wrote it, and he's a very reliable writer for a ton of Full Moon stuff. But David DeCoto directed it, and it's like he shows here, like, he can make a pretty serious movie.
Yeah,
right.
If he wants to.
If he gets a little time and a little money, yeah.
Yeah, I always thought that was really impressive that was the crew that got this movie made. And I think it's like, you know, it is a killer puppet movie, but it's got a love story, and it's got some good performances and some serious themes in it. And I just, every time I think about the fact that this movie exists, I'm just like, it was such an odd choice for them to go for movie number three, and it almost shouldn't work.
Yeah.
But it does so much more than it has any right to.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it does.
Those are the best kind of movies.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, that's how I feel kind of about like one of Steve's pick, like Blood Dolls, where it was just like on paper, you look at it and it's like you read the elements separately and you're like, these shouldn't all be in the same movie. But then they are, and they work, and it's just this amazing movie loaf of all of these things, you know, kind of just put together.
Yeah.
But Puppet Master 3, you know, I remember going through my first kind of run through of the Puppet Master movies, and knowing that they always had this reputation of being low budget, you know, second tier. And I just remember like responding so well to part three and being like, I feel like this is elevated. And I love any, you know, Guy Rolfe as Toulon is a huge upgrade.
So yeah.
He's so good. And, you know, that's why he'll continue to play the character for such a long time.
Yeah.
And anytime you get a B movie with Richard Lynch as the villain,
right?
Mm-hmm.
Like I'm watching, because that guy, you know, he is just the perfect, like, that's another thing about doing our show that Steve and I have come to love so much is like looking at these people who spent the majority of their careers working within genre stuff and treating them like A-listers and treating them, you know, with like the respect that maybe they don't get from like mainstream publications and stuff like that. Like Barbara Crampton, probably the, you know, the most mainstream success of people that we've talked to, but doing our interview that we did last year with Ted Nicolau was amazing because like, I just have a reverence for, you know, it's the genre, whether it's straight horror or horror comedy or exploitation cult movies, it's the genre and subgenres of the fringe that is all the stuff that I've consumed through most of my life and has been most meaningful to me. So to talk to someone like Ted Nicolau and to have him talk about subspecies and making those movies and stuff like that, you know, it's just like, I know they like to give interviews. I know they like to look back on their work and see that there's people who appreciate their work. And so I like highlighting these sort of champions of B movies and low and micro budget movies. We did a Slave Girls from Beyond Infinity episode, or not Slave. That was the one with Ted Gagan. We did the Sorority Babes in the Slimeball Bowlerama 2 with Brink Stevens, because Brink Stevens directed that. And, you know, reprises her role as a ghost in that movie. And it's like Brink Stevens, amazing, like 300 plus IMDb credits of just low budget, horror, exploitation, softcore, all that stuff.
Right.
And but like to me, like I get giddy when I get to like meet these people and have conversations with them. So I love that we champion people like this and treat, you know, all the work that they've done in their career, you know, like it's any actor's IMDb resume. And
is she still married to the guy who created The Rocketeer? I think was it Dave Stevens? He was a comic book artist.
No, she was married to him very briefly.
Okay,
but
gotcha.
She kept Stevens as her last name.
Gotcha. Okay,
but
okay.
I mean, I met her. A while back, and we kept in touch, and I was able to get her to, you know, come on the show to talk about the Sorority Babes. It just an amazing person, and so generous with her time, and so kind, and just willing to like talk about anything and everything. And another one of those people is Denise Duff, and that is what I will segue into my third and final full moon pick, which is Bloodstone Subspecies 2.
Oh yeah, and you put your lunchbox up, and I've got my calendar.
I put my
picture.
Lunchbox up. You've got your calendar picture, and you can't really see it too well, but that framed picture behind the bike over there is a Bloodstone Subspecies
awesome.
2. I kind of feel like Subspecies 2 is the pinnacle of Full Moon.
Yeah,
I think it exists in such a way where it's just outside the parameters of a Full Moon movie. It's just a good Romanian Gothic vampire movie.
Right.
Like, I just think it's kind of the pinnacle. And Steve and I were a little more split on the Subspecies spinoff Vampire Journals, which I really like. Steve liked aspects of it, but wasn't as into the whole movie on a whole as I was. I really like Vampire Journals, and I've gone back to it and watched it a few times since we covered it for the show. But Subspecies 2, there was a moment when I was watching Subspecies 2. I remember the first movie, I feel like I saw it on cable in the early 90s because the name stuck out to me. And I feel like I had this weird kind of like sense memory that I almost thought was like a Mandela effect of like, oh, there's this vampire movie that takes place in like Romania, and there's a vampire with really long fingers. And I just remember seeing it. Maybe I was homesick on the couch one day and it was on cable. And but I never went back to it or really thought much about it until Subspecies was brought up as one of the franchises we were going to cover on the show. And so I was like, all right, cool. Well, we're going to do them all. And so I watched the first one and I went, there's some good stuff here. Like there's, you know, some nice location shooting. There's some stuff that doesn't work about it. But then reading about the production, it really made sense. When I popped on Subspecies 2, from basically the introduction scene, I was just like, oh no, this is like a movie.
This
to me looked almost like no real difference between an A and a B movie. Like I thought Denise Duff as Michelle in that movie was such an upgrade and brought so much to that character. And I thought she was just so kind of captivating in that movie. I don't think 3 is as good. I know you really kind of have to view them as one thing because it's a story arc that goes into the next movie. But I think Subspecies 2 works as like a standalone. And I've really felt for a long time like that one particular movie. Like if someone said to me, like, what's a full moon movie that a mainstream moviegoer who occasionally is okay with renting a genre movie could watch and enjoy? And I don't even think they need to watch part 3 because the cliffhanger ending is fine. But I think they could watch that. And there's even like a little previously on, there's a little voiceover in the beginning that kind of says the events of the first movie. And it's really all you need. And it works really well as a standalone movie. I genuinely really love Subspecies 2. And so when we, you know, when we got to cover them 2 and 3 together as an episode proper was a lot of fun. But to have Denise Duff and Kevin Spiritus on to talk about what it was like to shoot those two movies in Romania was so just so insightful. And they were just delightful and so happy to be together again in an interview. They're such good friends. And like, they just have an amazing energy. And yeah, I just, there's something about that movie where I even feel like, you know, Ted Nicolau, I think, thinks very highly of that one. And I think that's kind of a common consensus among Full Moon fans, is that it may not be everyone's number one, but it's probably on everyone's like short list.
Yeah.
Yeah, so unlike Steve's picks, where I hadn't seen any of them, these were right up my alley. I was a big Subspecies kid growing up, big Puppet Master kid growing up. I watched all of them. At this point, like, it's been sort of so long that like I couldn't tell you if that was Subspecies 1 or Subspecies 2, but like I watched them all the time as a kid. Puppet Masters, I loved those. But I did just watch Castle Freak for the first time. I think it was during COVID. So it's been in the last 4 years, you know. Mm-hmm. And I really enjoyed that. And I kind of went in more like I want to watch it, but I wasn't excited to watch it. Weirdly, even though it was like my choice, but I was like, I feel like I need to see this. And then by the end of it, I was like, no, this was really good. Like, I really, really enjoyed this one. I probably like From Beyond and maybe Reanimated a little bit more, but like maybe if I revisit it a couple more times, it can grow on me. But I thought it was really good and very like very shocking in some scenes as well. But and also kind of like not what I expected the movie to be, you know, and in a great way, in all the sort of best ways possible. So yeah, Castle Freak, if you haven't seen it, go check that one out. But yeah, Subspecies, I love that series.
And I should use this opportunity to say, like, the episode that we did on Castle Freak, it was an early one, I think about a year and a half ago, but we had Stuart Wellington from the Flophouse podcast on, and it was really fortuitous because he worked himself into the like written lore of the movie, because he was on the discussion of being maybe the person who is behind the idea that Giorgio ripped his own dick off.
Yeah. He's contributed that lore. Yeah.
Zach, what are your thoughts on those?
I mean, I will say they're all great picks, from Head of the Family all the way down to Subspecies 2. I agree. They're all fantastic Full Moon films that represent the company very well. I feel like Subspecies and Puppet Master are like the, you know, the babies of Full Moon, in the sense that, you know, going into Full Moon, Transfers had already been made. So the Transfers 2, it was their film, but it's not a, it's not, it's Full Moon produced, but you know, it came out, obviously Transfers came out before Full Moon came in, into being. I agree with you about Subspecies One. I feel like while I do like Puppet Master One, some their sequels or the third one, they, it's like they got a better, they got a little bit more money so they could do a little bit more with the execution, and it shows. I agree. Subspecies 2 out of the whole franchise, I think it's the best one. And the most like cohesive and moves quickly. The pacing's really good, and the music is great. Puppet Master 3 is the most fun out of those first three films because it is like the culmination. You know, where are we going to go with all these characters? What are we going to get now? And like you said, Steve, the six shooter is that's the birth of the six shooter. And it's such a great puppet.
Yeah.
The, you know, for those that don't know what Full Moon movies are, like just the idea of animatronics and stop motion animation, it's just the, it's the pinnacle, I think, at that time, and no one else was really doing it that way, you know? And like Subspecies has like the little Subspecies guys, the little demon guys that come out.
Yeah, I loved them. That's amazing. Why I watched it.
It's so good. And that second one like builds on that as well. Right. So
yeah,
I love all those movies. I'm just shouting out those two specifically because I think those are two of my favorites out of those four. Puppet Master 3, I would say, I might say, in my opinion, is like the best of Full Moon. If I needed one movie to represent all of Full Moon, what would it look like? I would probably tell people, go see Puppet Master 3.
You know? Yeah, probably.
It's just such a weird choice because it's like we were saying, like it was a Universal Monsters homage. And then they do this prequel where they're essentially... Okay, well now how do? We have the puppets being controlled and they're killing people and they're the villains. Now they become the good guys, and then Puppet Master 3 just becomes Inglorious Puppets for a movie, which is like such a fun choice that the good, you know, like bad puppets go good, or you know, like it's I really appreciate that they took that swing, and I think there is, you know, I mean, if you get a dialect coach in there, they'll sit there and be like, okay, well, that's not an accurate German accent and stuff like that. And, oh, this, there's, you know, the, there's a lot of attempts at period detail, and someone can tell you that the model of the person's like pistol that they're using wasn't made until 1942. And this is set in 1941 and yada, yada. But like, that's not really what this is about. It's like they're using, you know, it very much feels like a studio lot production, which is fine, like totally fine. I don't have any issues with that at all. And it feels like they're doing a lot of this on sets, but it feels appropriate.
I'm okay.
Like there's a serial feel to it also. Yes. I mean, you brought up The Rocketeer before, which is a movie that Steve and I both love also.
Yeah, no, and it's great. It just functions across all platforms that it needs to. Yeah, and I agree. I think Subspecies 2 is the prestige wing of the Full Moon, you know, catalog. And Castle Freak, I'm going to disagree with Barbara respectfully. I think it's perfectly named. It's a nasty sounding title for a nasty, nasty movie. Yeah. Maybe the gnarliest movie in the entire catalog, maybe the gnarliest thing that Charles Band has ever been associated with, and it's great. I'm saying this as a compliment. I'm not saying that to dissuade anybody from watching it. If anything, that should encourage you. But yeah, Castle Freak is really great. Yeah, the solid picks all around.
Yeah, and Steve, to give us a real quick deep cut for Full Moon because we didn't get one from you.
Oh, real quick deep cut. I want to shout out a later Full Moon release in case people think that they've just packed it in. There's a movie from 2016 called Trophy Heads, not to be confused with Shrunken Heads. Trophy Heads is one of the smartest comedies that Full Moon has ever done. It's this parody where he brings back all of his favorite Scream Queens going back to the Empire era. So Michelle Bauer and Brink Stevens and Denise Duff and Jackie Lavelle and all these amazing people, Linnea Quigley, all these amazing women are in this movie, which is very short and very quippy and very funny. Like there's the whole back half is Jackie Lavelle and Denise Duff in basically like this odd couple sort of pairing where they're sniping at each other, and like, you know, they get to play up their insecurities, they get to make a good satire about how like the industry disposes of women after a certain age. Like
that movie is so much funnier and so much savvier than I think people give it credit for. So check out Trophy Heads from 2016.
Okay. Okay, and check out the Puppet Masters and Castle Freaks podcast.
Yeah,
Steve and Jared, thank you guys so much for coming on the show and doing the watch list with us. Obviously, I'll put links in the show notes. But anything else you guys want to plug? Any side projects that you want to plug? Jared, you got anything going on you want to give a shout out to?
I'll be brief because I don't really have anything. I do have a short film that I produced that's in post right now, but I don't know a release date yet, so I can't make a true plug for it at this point or give any more information about that yet. But I will say just when you're hearing this, you'll be probably only a few days away from our 100th episode with Barbara Crampton and Michael Gingold talking about Reanimator, a whole 90-minute interview. Like, it's really she gave us so much, and it was so fun to do. And we record these things early, and we recorded it, we wanted to be the first, and I think Barbara even says on microphone we're the first people she's talked to about Reanimator for any anniversary stuff, because we recorded it months ago.
We just want that on the record because it comes out later. Wanted that out there.
Right. Yeah. And so we can finally put that out for everyone to hear. So March 14th, our 100th episode.
Awesome.
Steve has some other stuff to plug. So Steve, what else have you got to plug?
Yeah, I also host a show called Cinemarcade. So that's cinema and arcade is one word. That's the show where we are watching movies and then playing the video game adaptations of those movies to see how they compare and contrast. So we've got close to 100 episodes of that show as well. I started these both around the same time. So check that out. We've got a bunch of amazing episodes out there.
Did you see that they are releasing an old school Super Nintendo style Terminator 2 side scroller game?
Nice. Oh, I love it. I love it. That'll go. There's already a lot of Terminator 2 games that'll go really well.
Yeah, they're retelling the story, but like in 16-bit or something. It's just remarkable that someone is making that, you know?
I love that they're doing that. There's a little indie film that played at Fantastic Fest this year called Frankie Frico.
We love Frankie Frico.
That's about to get a game adaptation as well. And awesome. they're making it like an old-school 8-bit game adaptation,
got one as well, too.
I think it did, yeah. So there's a lot. There's a lot of weird ones that we find out. Like the episode we just recorded was on the Janae and Caro film City of Lost Children. There's a PS1 game based on that came out in America, shockingly enough. So so definitely check that out. And I'll also throw out that I was on Jeopardy a couple months ago. Check me out on Pop Culture Jeopardy on Amazon Prime, episode 11. Yeah, see me and my fiance Ailish and our friend Ashley competing for Colin Jost's affection.
Awesome.
That's great. Well, thank you guys again so much. Everybody out there, please go give them a listen. They have a fantastic podcast.
Thank you so much, guys.
I'll have all the links to their Instagram, social media, and all the podcatchers and everything in the show notes. So go give them a follow. Go give them a like. And, if you do listen to them, please go give them 5 stars on Apple or Spotify.
We appreciate it.
Wherever you listen to it. It always helps to boost the algorithm and all that. So thank you so much. Zach, thank you to you, my friend, for doing what you do, my
always
man.
Always my pleasure. Always my pleasure.
For bringing the props.
There you go.
And as always,
we'll catch you on the dark side. Mwah.
Be sure to subscribe to Podcasting After Dark and give us a 5-star rating on iTunes. Support Podcasting After Dark on Patreon. Follow us on Instagram and Facebook at Podcasting After Dark. And visit us next time for another installment of Podcasting After Dark with Corey Stevenson and Zach Schaefer.
Hey everybody, I'm Tim. And I'm Dean.
And we're the hosts of Talking Back. We're a retro-based podcast covering movies, comics, video games, and more.
Check us out every Monday where we hit the rewind button and dig into some of our favorite content from the past. We like to keep things fun, lighthearted, and informative.
Do you feel like you need more nostalgia in your life? Then check out Talking Back. We're available everywhere podcasts are found.